Just a heads up, I can see that you've got this whole show scripted out, so
no, we don't.
You might want to get back on point.
I am a radio icon.
Let me
see. And by the way, so are you.
Hi, I'm Max, and hi, I'm Mike. Here's the Oddcast.
You are a pussy.
Everybody's dodging us.
Everybody's dodging us. Why is that?
There's no reason to talk to us.
Because most of what you say is gibberish, that's why.
Ladies and gentlemen, Max Tolkoff.
Are we rolling?
Good evening or afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you happen to be. Welcome to the last Oddcast of the year. This is the season ender, so we can take a break and I don't have to talk to Halloran for a little while. And we thought, as the season ender today, well, Michael, I'll let you explain.
Well, first of all, you're completely wrong. This is not the last one. This is the best of. This is actually starting in January.
No, well, here's the thing.
Because
Wait. I did try to do a highlight reel of the best of. Guess what?
There is no best of.
No, this is it.
This is it. This is why normally in the TV season when they go to the best ofs, we're going to go through the history, because you kept complaining to me.
Oh, no.
We keep talking about 91X. Nobody wants to hear. And I said, fuck you, Tolkoff. Everybody wants to know about 91X.
No, everybody's heard it already. Here's the thing.
No, they haven't. You know why? Can I tell you? Stop for 1 second. I have gone and procured men and somewhat men that worked at 91X prior to you.
I'm telling you, this is the last episode that we talk about 91X. Not doing it next year. We're done.
We're going to cut this into 15 parts, so it'll be 15 parts of this. Max Tolkoff, before you started at 91X, before you made the trudge across the Alps into San Diego, which year did you arrive in San Diego?
I arrived in the summer, August, as a matter of fact, of 1982.
82. Did you know that 91X was on the air prior to that, playing shitty music?
Yes, because...
Did you know... Okay,
I'm sorry.
Answer yes.
Are we in the impeachment hearing?
You are. Did you know that 91X had people that worked there prior to you? And actually prior to it being a live radio station. Did you know that?
Yes.
Okay. I have procured two, not one, but two of those people. One taller, one not so tall, who was actually there before you got there, who are here to share their stories about dismal conditions, working conditions.
So I don't have to say anything this week.
No, because you're going to have to basically go, here's your quote for this week.
Okay.
I had no idea that people worked there before me.
All right, William the Corker, just hit that button, go like this, and I'll go, I had no idea. It'll be like it's on cart.
They call those samplers nowadays.
Yeah, Jack. Very good.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce you to, first of all, on my far, far left, this is Blair Schultz, who's got 55 million names. I've known you as Blair Schultz all your life because you and I worked together at Wheels. You worked at 91X well before.
I think I was Jonathan Blair when we worked together at
Wheels. Oh, that's right. Oh, my God,
yeah.
You were Jonathan Blair.
I do have 55 million names.
That's right. Weren't you with the same name at 91X in the early days?
Blair on the air.
Blair on the air.
Right. Yeah.
And William Kalagian, also known as Billy Bones, or...
Billy Bones.
Billy Bones.
The Hungry Armenian.
The Hungry Armenian, who was working at 91X.
And who gave you that name?
Me.
What?
Wrong answer.
Yeah, wrong. I gave you that name, didn't I?
No, you tripped out on it, though. It was because they made me change it to Billy Bones.
Can't we lie for the sake of entertainment on this podcast?
No. No lying is allowed. So okay. Billy Bones is here. Blair Schultz, formerly Jonathan Blair. I want to start with Jonathan Blair Schultz.
Thank you.
Otherwise known as Schultz.
Okay, first of all, otherwise known as Schultz. Your real name is?
Blair Schultz.
Blair Schultz.
Yeah.
You were
It's the shittiest name ever. It's not a radio name.
No, it's a good name. No. It's a good name. Born where?
New Jersey. New Brunswick, New Jersey.
And when did you move to San Diego?
1968.
And do you remember moving to San Diego?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was 7 years old.
Okay.
But, yeah.
So you have...
Of course I remember.
You have memories. You weren't totally on drugs yet. So you moved to San Diego. And when did you know you wanted to get into radio?
Well, you know, I just really wanted to be a musician.
He was seven. Are you asking if you wanted to be in radio when he was seven?
No,
he
just said when. See, this is, see what I'm talking about, Blair?
I just answer questions.
Okay. When did you know you wanted to get into radio?
Probably about 15 or 16.
And when I was, what was the turning point for you?
Well, the turning point was I wanted to be a musician, and I started listening to really good music, and I realized that I was never going to be that good. So when I started, you know, listening to radio
stations.
Give
me an example. What you were playing like what? How good were you?
Oh, I was listening to jazz. So there's no way. I just, you know.
Guitar? All right, thank you very much for the interview. Goodbye. Player. Blair Schultz gone already. Jazz, what the fuck?
I shouldn't have said that. I know. I absolutely know Halloran hates jazz.
You know, no, it's not that. It was you were listening to Return to Forever.
I was listening to Chick Corea, and I'm
okay. That's
to,
not jazz. Okay,
that is jazz.
Whoa, hey.
What? I thought we were supposed to be talking about 91X.
He wants to go back to the time.
I
when
want
the
to find
Earth
out
cool.
why he became the man he became.
Nobody
so
cares.
You're listening to fake jazz.
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares
can
about
we
that.
Just they do. Cut to the point where.
Why were you listening to that music? Because
oh God, Billy, I can't. Can we go?
This is what I need to know. This is what I told you. I'm going to start kicking you in the gonads,
okay.
Tolkoff.
It's okay.
Why are we listening to that music as opposed to what was being played on the
this
radio?
This is all going to be edited anyway, so we just need to get through it quickly.
Oh, it will.
Yeah.
So shut
okay,
the fuck
so,
up, so. You listened to Chick Corea.
I was listening to jazz. So I just got interested in radio. And I was. Mr. Billy Bones.
What instrument did you play?
Guitar.
That's what I thought.
Of course. Everybody played guitar then.
Okay.
And no one plays guitar now. It's sad.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So you said you turned on what station and went, I'm going to be a DJ?
KMET in L.A. Yeah.
So you were living in L.A. at the time?
No, but you could pick it up down here.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So you listened to the Mighty Met.
Yeah.
You listened to them and you decided, don't snore.
I actually interned up got an internship up there. So it was
okay.
It was super exciting.
Who did you intern for?
You were 14.
Anybody in particular?
Mike Harrison.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Mike Harrison,
yeah.
Just so you know, was the guy that coined the term AOR.
I know he was.
And he was like the first rock editor at R&R.
At R&R, yeah. He was huge.
Do you know what he does now? He's got this his own magazine called Talkers. He's a talk radio guy. He has a podcast, incidentally. Go ahead, snore. It's all right. It doesn't bother me.
It's not me snoring. It's the audience.
No. Yeah, but you want to talk about the early years when he was seven. Do you remember to the radio when you were seven?
Him, when did you want to get into radio? I didn't say, were you 7 years old? So he says at 14. And within 2 years, you were in it.
We're back. I lied at KSON, the country station, which was in my neighborhood. It was a College Grove Center. So they had a radio station there, and then I don't know if you remember, they had a plexiglass window and the studio. You could walk through the mall and you could see inside the AM station while they were doing their magical AM radio thing.
Right.
And that was pretty exciting. So I applied to a job for there. I lied. I told them I was 16 when I was actually 15. And they're like, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, here, be a janitor. We got stuff for you to do. And we can, maybe you can do a fill-in on the, you know, what they used to do remotes every weekend. This was a mainstay of KSON's revenue, was six-hour-long remotes, two of them, every Saturday and every Sunday. So my first gig on the air was to do remotes on KSON from noon until midnight. That was my first shift. A 12-hour-long shift. I was so excited.
Of
it was the most exciting fucking thing ever.
You were 15 years old.
Yeah.
Who's driving you to these events?
Well, I could walk from my house. Yeah.
So
I actually broke my arm bicycling there one day.
You
Yeah, I did.
Did you finish your shift?
If I understand this correctly.
Went to the hospital.
Did you finish your
shift? The show must go on, you know?
You're there with a gimpy arm. You're all fucked up in this gimpy arm.
Yeah.
And what kind of cocaine did you
and when
have?
And when I had that gimpy arm, that was when I went up to L.A., and Mike Harrison was putting in the very first format that KMET had ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And their jocks were fucking freaked out. Like, you mean you're not going to let me play any fucking track off of anything at any time of day or night? And it was like Rachel Donahue. All she was playing at KMET during her midday shift was like blues and soul. She was playing a lot of R&B. And so Mike's like, you know, we need a little bit consistent format here. So we went in overnight. And I, with my bum arm, he would hand me an album and we would, he put these, you know, like, what do you call it? Page covers, you know? Yeah. On the back of the album, with a piece of paper inside, and he would write off the album what songs could be played. So it was a limiting of the album. It was a huge, huge library of albums still. But when we pulled each album out and off the top of his head.
How many albums back in that? back in those days?
10,000.
Yeah, the rooms were floor to ceiling.
Oh, floor to ceiling albums.
With vinyl, but...
And we went through everyone. I would pull it off the shelf, and I would tell him the name of the album.
And he'd know what tracks to play.
Allman Brothers Eat a Peach. He would tell you, off the top of his head, which tracks to play off that album.
Right.
It was awesome.
That's pretty amazing. So you basically were the fucker who fucked it all up then.
That's right.
You fucked up KMET. You made KMET popular.
I was there when it was fucked.
Here's what I wanted to say before. Yes. Just because you should know this. Mike Harrison today not only has Talkers Magazine, but he has a podcast. Podcast servicing the talk radio industry. And you know what? That podcast only goes to programmers.
Because Max thinks at this point that every program director in the alternative world is listening to this podcast.
Well, they should be.
There's only one. It's Lenny Diana.
No, it's Brad Savage, too.
And Lenny and Brad.
And Tammy.
Haven't had Brad on yet.
And a bunch of other people.
And your wife.
But I'm just saying, Mike Harrison.
And Blair listened to one.
Mike Harrison. Yeah.
Billy has listened to one. He doesn't give a shit.
AOR does a podcast aimed only at the industry.
We can edit this part out, too. Okay, so you're 15, bum arm, working at KMET, fucking the whole thing up, making it rigid.
That's right.
So this would have been what year,
I'm
Blair?
So proud.
78. 78.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Okay. You were 16?
No, by then I was 17.
Holy shit.
So September of, here we go, big segue. September of 1978, that's when I turned 18, and that is also the month the 91X went on the air, brand new radio station. Down in Mexico, but they had only the transmitter site, an empty room with a transmitter in it, and another empty room that had a two-stack Apex reel-to-reel, two of them side by side. We had it set up so that there was a 25 hertz tone that could be applied at the end of the tape, which would relay to the next tape.
Right.
That's how they did them. So we actually taped the morning show from a studio in San Diego in the Harcourt Brace Jovanovich building. It's still down there on 6th Avenue.
The studio's still there or just the building?
The building.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is where Lester Banks used to hang out?
Close. Very close. Yeah. But not that
building.
Not that
somewhere
building.
Down there was whatever.
Because that was where it was all happening down there. KPRI was down there. Right. And so 91X would want to be down there, too.
Was there nothing on the air before that? In other words, it wasn't even...
I think it must have been Mexican signal and Mexican broadcasting. Then they worked out this deal because you understand that what this was trying to do was to work around the Mexican law that you couldn't take a signal that was a Mexican signal supposed to be for Mexicans and turn that towards America and make money off of it in America, you know, essentially.
So how did that,
taking that signal?
So how did they explain that to you? Like, what was the reason? Was it because that John Noble, the original owner of the station,
Ed Noble.
He owned it because he married a Mexican woman, thus making him essentially a citizen down there.
Right.
But he also owned ad agencies, so he's very wealthy. And
And he worked out this arrangement. Mm-hmm. It was a compromise, and it was, you know, highly unusual, and it took a lot of effort to make this happen. So at midnight, the morning show, John and Mary, John Grievous and Mary Curran.
Okay.
They would start taping at midnight.
Look, Tolkoff said, wow, something he didn't know about the
quietly. I did it quietly because I want to hear him.
Okay.
Okay,
shut up.
Fucking God.
All right.
So they would tape from midnight to 4 a.m., the morning show. They would have a clock in the studio set to 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., right?
Right.
So they would just pretend like they were doing it six hours later.
Right.
So when they finished up at 4 a.m., then we had people, me, just out of high school, because
driving down across the border?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
So we had tape couriers, right? And we schlepped those tapes across the border, and that became kind of a dicey situation because, you know, the Border Patrol, they weren't going to be fooled for very long. How come you're coming down here three times a day back
and forth?
Well, wait a
minute. Would you see the same border people all the time?
Yeah, I would.
On the Mexican side or the U.S. side?
Oh, the U.S. side.
Both, probably.
Well, I never had the same guy twice in 6 years. because there are 32 lanes.
Now there's 32 lanes.
Well, try doing it three times a day, and some of them are at 4 a.m.
Yeah, yeah.
Regularly, you know. So, but it gave us 2 hours between the finish of the recording.
To get it there.
So they could rack it up, and then they would start it approximately at 6 o'clock.
Más o menos.
And so then we would have La Melodía Extra.
Just in case, the extra song, just in case
it
was short.
An extra song, yeah. So that was, we would have to listen to
the drop song, now they call it.
And we would have to actually give time checks a lot more than normal because we wanted to know where we were actually at.
Oh, my God.
You know? And so it would be like, call down to the studio, tell them to put in a lot of Melodía Extra because we're like, we're 10 minutes off. You know? And what got really bad was that people started, okay, because it was up to the jock. Right, so the jock is going to be recording on a reel-to-reel tape, and he's going to make the transition to the next tape as fast as possible, right?
Right.
Supposedly. What really started to happen was the jocks are like, oh, man, I hated that break. I want to go back and edit that break.
So they would go punch in, or they would go and, like...
Punch.
They would go punch in.
Yeah.
And it sounded, this is why I said...
It sounded like hell.
But so this is pre-voice tracking on tape. And it fucked up the industry back then for obvious reasons because 90 Rex is no longer doing it.
Well, so it was quite a while that this was the way we did it. And
so were you pulling a shift as well or just running tapes originally?
Originally, the deal was I was going to get to do weekends and be one of the tape couriers. Right.
Wow.
So that was, of course. Are you kidding me? Yeah. Put me on the air.
You're 18. And you're basically going to be the guy.
Yeah.
The man.
Well, I'm going to be a part-time guy, which was,
But they were paying you
appalling.
To run. They were paying you to run the tapes.
And
though.
What year was this? Are we still in 79 or?
78.
And 78, not even 79 yet.
Who hired
78.
You, Blair?
Who hired me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gene Knight was the program director.
Oh, okay.
What?
Yeah.
No.
And Jimmy Rogers. They were running the place.
Okay. And then, the couple of technical things
Gene
I want to get
Knight.
Through.
Yeah.
How
Shit.
Many songs do you remember being in the library in 78 that you were playing? Because you went from KMET, so KMET got down to how many? Out of 10,000 albums, they got down 9, to
9,000.
They got down to 9,000. So how many tracks do you think you were playing at 91X when it first started?
Well, 91X when it first started was X Marks the Rock.
Yeah.
X Marks the Rock.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know that? Tolkoff?
Yeah, I had heard that. But at the time,
Marks the Rock.
It was so Gene Knight was in charge before Frank Felix?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the first program director was Gene.
Wow.
And Gene, you know, Gene has top 40 sensibility, likes rock. He likes everything, really. And that was what 91X sounded like. It was a rock station with a lot of pop. I mean, you know, when Earth, Wind, and Fire's Got to Get You Into My Life came out, well, we were on that. Bam! It was an instant ad, you know?
So you weren't an AOR station? You were a rock station.
It was a rock hybrid. I mean, at this point, what else could you call it? But I really dug it. And we had a lot of fun in that we were doing this kind of, you know...
Weird, bizarre...
Pirate radio, strange thing.
From Mexico.
Tapes down in Mexico.
And you had to... How many times an hour did you have to do the ID in Spanish?
Oh, every hour. XA Tierra FAME Baja California Mexico.
So how many songs did you start with? Getting back to that.
Oh, so back to
approximately,
that.
Approximately.
Oh, a big library.
Huge.
Big library.
Yeah.
Probably
500, 600.
600
or something.
I would bet.
Okay.
Gene may be wrong. He's listening now, obviously.
Gene. You can text us right now.
Text us
1-800 Get Gene. G-E-T.
I would think. Right. I mean, it was a great library. It's just, it was all on cart. It was just, it was all new. It was pristine. It was a pretty studio. It was great.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. All on cart, of course.
So, but here's the standout story for me in terms of my weekend shift and how I would drive my own tapes.
Right.
Down to the border. Right. So I finish my shift, put the 25 hertz tone at the end of it. Okay, boom, rack it up, put it in these little boxes. Let's go. Take off down there. Get down there. The engineers are down there. It's actually a sidebar to this story is that because of the way that we worked out the compromise, in Mexico, there had to be somebody employed, a Mexican, for every American that we were employing in the company. So we had Mexican engineers down there at the studio site, and they were the ones that were putting these tapes up on the tape rack. And
And waiting for the next shift.
And waiting for the next shift. It was truly just we were doing something for the Mexican economy. So I show up, and I hand them the tapes and take off. And now I'm excited because, you know, I want to hear. I'm going to be on the radio. And here we
go. Right.
I know the song that was the switch off point, and that song ends, and there's dead air. I'm like, what the fuck? I know I dropped the tapes off, so what's going on, you know? But then I hear this. Is this sound? It's this sound that goes like this. It was like explosions or something.
It's the Mexican national anthem starting.
and then it's like. and then,
was it?
No. What it was it's the music of that next reel that's just running really slow. But now it's starting to speed up. And it's speeding up. It's like, oh, what the? So now it's speeding up. It's a recognizable song now, but it's still not at the right speed. And then finally, it reaches the right speed. I said, What the hell happened?
The tape.
Oh, but wait. No, it didn't stop at the right speed. Now it's going faster. So it's freewheeling. So, they didn't get the tape between the pinch roller and the capstan. So it's just the torque of the machine that's taking this thing.
To pause you for 1 second to explain to the young kids that are listening right now, Blair is referring to reel-to-reel tapes, which were like very large cassettes that didn't have a cassette around them. They actually had open reels that you had to put on a big machine that had a capstan. And a pinch roller that would keep the tape.
I'm sorry, who are you talking
MP,
to?
I'm talking to the young programmers.
There are no young programmers.
There are young programmers that are listening, Max told off, because you're insistent that people like Brad Savage does not know what a fucking reel-to-reel is.
Yes, he does.
No, he doesn't. He knows what a cassette is, so I'm describing it as a big cassette. It's a big fucking cassette.
It's a big 12-inch, baby.
Yes.
Well, you were using 12-inch reels, 10-inch reels? What were you using back in the day? Were you running everything at 15?
Yeah, they were 10-inch reels, weren't they?
Were you running at 7.5 or 15?
Yeah. Seven and a half. Yeah.
All right. Can I ask a question before the sun goes down? At what point did you become proficient at production? So you were working, doing part-time, and then you're 17 years old, and you start to learn how to do production.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You're screwed around the studio like everybody else, making noises in microphones.
Yeah. And I got fired a couple of times from radio stations, and so then I got another gig. Oh, my God, that's a great story. It take too long.
Confine us to 91X today. We don't. We're paying by the minute.
It is a 91X story.
Oh, okay. In that case, go ahead.
Let's see. So let's just keep going. I got proficient in production because I wanted to stay in radio. You know,
was there a production director before you or with you or
at 91X?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I went. I did a little tour around the country of different radio stations, just being a disc jockey. I was in Washington D.C., went to Detroit. That's where I met Halloran. Mm. And getting fired from Detroit, I came back to San Diego, and I became suddenly proficient in production because that was the job that was open.
Right.
And I was going to take it, no matter what. So that's how I got real.
So you came back in 85 because I worked with you 80 end of 80. Well. Yeah, end of 84, 85. 7-8 months. When did you leave Wheels?
September-ish?
Yeah.
Yeah, 85.
Okay. Yeah, 85.
But I was doing production the whole time. You know,
right, because everybody did their own production
at Wheels.
You're a disc
jockey. You got to do production.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, jocks don't understand nowadays that...
Which jocks are you talking about?
Every one of them. Every single goddamn one of them.
Just the PDs are listening.
Because our workload... You want to talk to the kids about what it was like in radio? Every jock had to do almost an equal number of hours of production, commercial production. So you do a shift for 4 hours, and then you likely have 4 hours of production to do.
What Max is referring to,
an 8-hour day.
You young children, what Max is referring to is when radio stations were run very inefficiently by having DJs do all their own production, as opposed to nowadays where they pretty much get a production director in there that knows what he's doing, and it's all digital, and you walk in and you just go, join us tomorrow, join us today, join us next week.
Nobody does that anymore. Nobody does that anymore. That was my point. No, they don't.
When's the last time you worked at a radio station? 10 years ago?
Even K-Rock in L.A., and even 91X down here now, nobody does updates on promo items.
We all did.
Well, we were all supposed to. This week,
as I said,
like
when did
this
you work
Friday,
last?
Tomorrow, and then today.
Back to Blair.
I don't hear that a lot. Blair, do you hear that a lot?
He doesn't know.
I currently work for about 10 radio stations around the country doing promo updates and drives me fucking nuts. It depends on
the program director
because some are like, you know, whatever, throw a promo out there. And then others are like, they send me a page that's, you know, 16 different variations of every possible way you could say.
Next hour, join us at
the reason I asked
today,
about
later today,
Blair
at 6.
The reason I asked, Michael, the reason I ask is because I'm comparing it to the day later when Kevin Stableford became our image production guy. It took him almost 2 years to become proficient doing production.
That's because he didn't know what he was doing in the beginning.
No, he had no idea.
Because he was the dead dog kid. What can you say?
Thank you. But who named him that?
He must have named himself that.
No, I did.
Did you?
Max named everybody.
Oh,
that's
Max.
When everybody had dumb names on the radio.
And wait, I have a story about that. I wish Kevin were here, but one day...
He's coming in an hour. Just relax, okay? Right. It was a surprise.
One day, John Lynch comes up to me in the hallway. Kevin had been the dead dog kid on the air for, I don't know, like about 3 or 4 months. And he sees that we pass each other. And he goes, "Hey, Max." I go, "Yeah. Hey, John." He goes, "That name for Kevin, the dead dog kid, don't you think that's a little weird? Don't you think it's a little dark? Are you sure we should be having somebody on the air by the name of the dead dog kid?" And I said to him, "Trust me, this will be great." And this was early days, 3 or 4 months after he started. Within a year, I would see John and he would go, "Hey, how's the dead dog kid?" I mean, it was just totally accepted at that point.
By John,
by everybody. Nobody had a problem with the dead dog kid after about
it's
8 or 9 months.
It's sticky.
It's very punk rock.
Absolutely.
And it's
a great name.
And
good name.
Great.
Max Tolkoff. Give it up for Max
Tolkoff.
What? For what?
He named the dead dog kid. You wanted recognition, you got it.
Thank you.
Why did you leave Brian Jones with the same name?
I don't know.
Why didn't you name him something else?
But what's funny, one funny thing is when Max first came to San Diego and he was Todd Ralston, right?
Ugh,
so he was doing nights and then Tad, T. Brian Shock, was doing overnights.
Overnights.
So Jalero said, "I had to tell, you know, Brian or Tad to call himself, you know, T. Brian Shock because I didn't want Todd followed by Tad."
That's really? Is that what was going on? Holy shit.
That's what Jalero told me.
So you learn these things when you come to the Oddcast podcast. You learn where your name came from.
If Jim would talk to me, we would have him on too. But I don't think he wants to talk about it.
Back to Blair, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, back to Blair.
So when you leave, what? Did you get fired from 91X?
Yes.
Okay, how did you get fired?
Twice.
How'd you get fired the first time?
I think I got fired twice.
Let's see now. You came back when I just started over there. But you had gotten fired before that, right? Or that was the first time you got fired?
I'm a little confused about my own life right now. But let me
help you through this.
Okay.
But you got fired twice.
Yeah.
Before you left to go to DC and Detroit.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So do you remember any of the times you got fired and how much weed were you smoking?
It's all coming back to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, who fired you the first time?
The first time was our favorite Frank Felix and Roger Agnew. And Roger called me up and he's like, "We're making changes here at 91X.
Oh,
and
Roger,
you're
Agnew.
Not a part of them."
Is that what he said?
Yeah, I always love that line.
But let me ask you a question. Are you the only person on the air staff that knows where the transmitter is?
No, there were more at that point.
I had to show others. I had to show others the way.
By the way, what were the changes that Roger was talking about, and why didn't they want you? That's what I want to know.
You've gotten to the crux of the next story that I was dying to tell you.
Oh, here finally. You can be quiet now, Michael.
So,
he's got a story to tell.
We changed format from the Gene Knight, Jimmy Rogers format, which was eclectic and fun and cool, to Felix and to Roger and I can't even get these names out. They cut the
library down, right?
Let him finish.
Cut the library down?
He basically made the library.
It's like cutting the forest down.
He's got to talk about this because this is what Frank Felix was known for.
What he was known for and what worked, quite frankly, for about a year was to take it from, you know, a big library down to 100 tracks. Literally.
No, there were more than that.
No.
Come on.
No. I worked the fucking format. It was 100 tracks. And it was no promotions department, no talking. Yep. You could talk, but you could say 91X and Tom Petty and play the song. You were there.
Yeah. We could do weather reports, too.
Did we get to do weather reports?
Yeah.
Were there block party weekends at that point?
There were block party weekends.
And you were still on tape at that point?
And a block from Fleetwood Mac. That was it.
But were you on tape still, or were you now going down there?
That was the transition. We were now going down there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we tightened it up. You started going down there all on cart still.
Yeah, mm-hmm, absolutely.
Okay. All on cart.
So he switched us around. What happened was when Frank and Roger came in, they said, hey, look, we've got this talent, this Blair guy, and he's only doing weekends. He should be on full time. And in other words, he's fucking cheap.
Right.
We'll put him on mornings. So I'm, 19?
Right.
And so I'm doing mornings. And at this point, I'm 19, right? So hey, I'm 19. Pissed off. I'm pissed off in general about this whole thing, that they took this cool radio station and that they now we're playing, you know, we've got three currents. It's Heartbreaker by Pat Benatar, Don't Do Me Like That by Tom Petty, and what's the third current? I mean, that was it. So I had maybe a bad attitude. I might have had a little bit of a bad attitude. And I was doing mornings, and I would show up late, traditionally. I can't remember. I owe our overnight guy a huge apology for...
Who was overnight at that point?
I don't remember his name.
Why were you late?
Nice enough guy.
Why were you late?
Because I was 19, I was up partying. And then I would come get up at, 5 in order to be on the air at 6. So...
Isn't that
driving to Mexico was another part of that.
Where were you living? Because
in San Diego.
That's like a half-hour drive down there and then another 15 minutes when you're over the border to get up there. It's like a 45-minute drive.
Yeah, and I did not plan accordingly.
Ah,
yeah. Okay. So I eventually the Mexican engineers would be laughing at me through the window because they'd look in and they'd see me with my head on the countertop sleeping. I'd put those chairs up so I could like stretch out.
Right.
I'm telling you, I had kind of a bad attitude.
Yeah, no wonder you got fired.
Well, wait, of course. So I would get really good at hearing the song fade. And when you start to hear that song, it still gets to me. To this day, I hear a song fading out. It's like, whoa, what? Got to get to that. And so, three songs. After that third song, you do a break. Here's the break. 91X and Fleetwood Mac. Boom, into the third song, the fourth song. So there's two more songs. And then out of that five-song set, we go into the stop set. Out of, on the back announce, it's like, that was Pat Benatar on 91X. Boom, into the spots.
Yep.
We play the spot break, come back in.
So technically, if you were...
I was sleeping through the shift.
If you knew what you were doing, you would have been in the production studio, carted up, just basically looked at your breaks and went 1, 2, 3, 4 and handed it to Jose, Freddie, what's the other guys who were down there? Hector. And just said, here, run these here. And then you would have gone into your car and slept for four hours.
That would have been step ballsier than what I was actually doing.
That's actually a voice tracking in 70s style.
Yeah.
But you could have done that and actually gotten caught up in your sleep.
Blair,
I don't know if it will... make you happy to know, but that was the exact modus operandi of Frank. That's what he perfected at KBPI in Denver,
yes,
where I was.
Yes, he was at BPI. That's right.
And that's where
that's
I worked.
Where you were.
Yeah. I worked there with John Bradley and Frank Cody. And
I'm still working
Larry
with John
Bruce.
Bradley.
Larry Bruce worked there, you know.
Yeah.
Before he went to KGB.
Yeah.
He was Lenny Bruce? Where was Lenny Bruce?
He was a Frank Felix 6 feet devotee.
Under. Yeah.
Yeah, before he came here. It was really funny being opposite him when I came here. But, yeah, Frank, in Denver, KBPI was like one of these, progressive stations from the 60s.
Lenny Diana, do you know where Denver is?
And eventually...
Brad Savage. It's kind of the edge of the mountains.
Frank figured out that cutting it down to just like Stairway to Heaven, Nights in White Satin, Lucky Man from ELP, the hits of the hits of the hits.
Oh, yeah.
They actually had
a very elegant way of describing it. It's the inverted pyramid concept.
Yeah.
And I like the inverted pyramid. It's actually true. It's scientifically true. Because if you have a pyramid upside down and the number one song is Stairway to Heaven, right? That covers the widest top of the inverted pyramid. Well, the second song, most popular song, is Freebird. Well, that's fewer people like that song than Stairway to Heaven. And as you keep going down that list, you're getting smaller and smaller down the inverted pyramid. So by the time you get down to song number 100, you've got such a fraction of people that will call that their favorite song compared to Stairway to Heaven. Why would we waste our time just playing more and more and more down that inverted pyramid to the point where you just don't have that many people who love that song? So it actually made sense. The only problem, of course, with that is burn factor, because I got to tell you, after a year, listening to 91X was kind of brutal.
Yeah, and that's what happened. By the way, in KBPI, he was able to do this for quite a few years because there was really no other competition, actually, except for KZY. But they were terrible. But I don't know if you remember this trick that Frank did. So when I was at KBPI, about once a week, Frank would come in at night on a Sunday, and he'd ask me what I've got coming up. And I go, bleh. And he'd go, all right, do me a favor. On that turntable, put on Brown Dirt Cowboy side two, okay, and just let it go, and then take a break. So he would come around behind the console. Album would be playing on one turntable, and on the other turntable, he would lift off the platter. Did he do that here?
No. Speed it up.
He would lift off the platter, and he would peel off the tape that was around the capstan from the previous week, right? Some splicing tape.
Right, right.
He would cut it on the bias, make sure it was perfect, because those capstans, if you got it off, they would rumble, and they go, you'd hear a thing.
It'd have to be perfect.
So he'd be there, and he'd have a template cut so that he could cut the tape properly. Then he'd wrap the capstan and put the platter back down. Then he'd tell me to put a long album on the other one, and he'd do the other one. I never knew this, but what it meant was that if you listen to KZY and KBPI, all the same music on KBPI sounded a little bit brighter for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you'd rather
a little
hear...
faster, a little up, more up-tempo,
yeah.
Had a kind of a sheen to it. You couldn't explain why.
You couldn't explain why, and that's why we killed KZY in the ratings the whole time. Always. They were just, we battered them.
So Stairway to Heaven basically became Raceway to Heaven as opposed to
but here, Escalator
to Heaven.
I don't think we did that at 91X, but I know we did that on 13K. They wanted 6% fast at 13K. Yeah. On the AM station.
So Frank's idea was to just eliminate all these songs you didn't have to worry about. But the problem was here at 91X with KPRI and KGB, this approach worked, but for not that long, correct?
Right. Where
there was this massive burnout factor.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they may remember it differently because it may have been longer than a year. It may have been several years.
Well, it was up until that summer of 82. Frank was still doing it, but John Lynch was getting more and more unhappy because the ratings were going down.
Right.
Frank
You're jumping.
Didn't know anything
You're
to
jumping.
Do.
I'm going to pause you there.
All right.
You leave, you go around the country after you get fired from the Frank Felix thing. I'm bringing you back to that. He
but
fires
you, come
you
back.
Because you were falling asleep.
That's right.
Why did you come back?
Which was, by the way, completely justified.
Of course it was.
Yeah.
I mean, he was falling asleep while you were talking.
If your disc jockeys are asleep on the air, I think that's probably good grounds
okay.
for firing.
And you're working your steps right now. You've apologized to Frank Felix. Now.
this has become a confessional.
How do you come back? Did you just sleep at the transmitter and then come back? How did that work?
This is the part I'm repressing. I can't really remember.
I had only been there for a few months, and then Blairita Brown shows up.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere, and I have no... And it was funny because Frank didn't like you. That was obvious.
Right.
And yet you were doing mornings, right? The second time around?
I think so. Okay, so there's obviously going to be a few glitches in, the perfect memory.
What did you do? Did you work at a gas station? What did you do in the meantime when you're fired from a radio job? Sell drugs?
No, I think I went to Europe. My dad was a professor at San Diego State, and he said, I'm going to an exchange program with a professor at University of Nice, France. Do you want to come with me? And I'm like, absolument.
So you actually bailed the country.
Yeah, I bailed the country. So when I came back, I think that must have been... I think maybe I told the story out of sequence about me sleeping on the air. Because I think when I came back, that was when we had changed from being taking the tapes down to being live on the air. Okay.
Either way.
So that's when I got fired. The second time that I got fired.
We'll have you wear a beret. When you come back, you'll be wearing a beret with a striped shirt.
So the second time I got fired was really weird because we had a guy named Chuck Geiger.
Oh,
we all know Chuck.
Right.
Chuck Geiger came to town, and all of a sudden, I'm not on the air anymore. Chuck Geiger's on the air in place of me. You remember this. Billy remembers this. So Chuck Geiger.
Billy was doing porn at that time.
Keep going, because I want to hear about all the names involved in the station in the early days. So you got Chuck
Geiger. He was actually here because it was like he was going to be here, and then he wasn't here, and then Max came.
This is one of my favorite 91X stories.
This must have been beforehand. Yeah.
So what happened was, all of a sudden I'm out of a gig, except, you know, they're feeling kind of weird. And John Lynch especially is feeling kind of weird that, you know, I just came back and now they're taking me off the air and kind of jerking me around. So they also had the AM syndication, like little machine that was going on back there. And we were producing syndication for a middle of the road, format. And so he gave me a job just cutting and editing tapes and doing all that. Did you do that too, Billy?
I didn't, but I remember you doing
me doing that?
Yeah.
So Chuck Geiger comes in and he's like, tell me what's going on here. What's going on with this place? I said, well, you know, I got to, like, and I kind of have a bad taste in my mouth about this, you know, as you guys understand from my storytelling here, and I explained the situation to him, what was happening. And he said, you know, this doesn't make any sense. I don't dig the whole vibe. I don't like the way they handled you. I don't like, you know, quite frankly, any of this. And I don't even really want to be in San Diego. I've got this gig in Denver. I think I'm going to take it. So here's a letter. And I want you to take this letter. And I'm supposed to be on the air my first shift in place of you this afternoon. So I'm going to clear the building. I'm going to go to the airport. I'm going to get on the plane, and I'm going to go to Denver to take this other gig at about 2:00. I want you to put this letter in Frank's mailbox. And the letter was explaining that
he quit.
He's quit.
Wait, how long
before
had he been
his
there?
First day?
Before his first, he quit?
Yeah. Yeah.
What? Why?
Chuck Geiger, ladies and gentlemen, the hero of the story so far.
So he was on for a total
amazing.
Of no minutes, but he was an employee.
He was an employee for no minutes. Yeah.
He was an employee, but
not
on the air.
And what did you do?
He may have been on, you know, this is where your memory fades. It was either a couple of days or no days.
So let me ask you this. You're still at the Harcourt Brace Building downtown, or had you moved
No, this was over Pacific Highway.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting.
So now I'm editing these middle of the road tapes, and here comes John, and he's like, "Hey man, you know, I'm sorry about that."
So is he owner?
And by the way,
is John owner at the time?
Here's a race.
He's always been the GM or the sales guy.
He's the GM.
No, but Nola owned it. At what point did he buy it?
Later, in the 80s.
Oh, this is what I'm asking.
Yeah.
You just said he's always been the GM. It's like
in the early days he was the GM. Do you want to know what year he bought it?
Yes. Fucking.
Okay, let me finish the story because I'm close to the end and there's not really much left to go. And you know, I hate when this happens. Okay, so the beautiful part is that Chuck Geiger on his way out turns me on to my next gig. He says, I know this guy named John Larson. He works in WAVA in Washington, D.C. They need a midday guy. You'd be great for it. You should go for it. So I'm like, fuck yeah. Called up John Larson. They flew me out. I mean, this was back in the day when they would fly you out for a job interview as a midday jock on a radio station. So, I was like, yeah, absolutely. Sign me on the dotted line. And $27,000 a year? Are you kidding me? That's more money than I can even imagine.
Right.
So that was the whole saga
of you leaving.
And Chuck Geiger. Yeah.
My favorite part of the story so far is the fact that when you left for $27,000 a year and you get to D.C., had you forgotten, obviously, because you were, what, 7 when you moved here? You've forgotten that cold existed? Snow?
Oh yeah.
Even though D.C. is temperate.
D.C., because then they transferred me from the D.C. gig to Detroit.
All right, so you work for Doubleday. Then.
Detroit, yeah, Doubleday Book Publishers, that then had a broadcast division.
Right.
Yeah.
So they quote unquote transferred you.
They did. Yeah.
So I have a question.
And you were not happy about that.
Oh yeah, I loved Detroit. You know, doesn't everyone?
I almost moved there. I Halloran showed me around all those mansions that were deserted, and you could buy for $10. And I thought, oh, this would be a great place to live.
Yeah.
Both of you. can you answer this question? When I came out in August of 82, it was to fill the 8-to-1 slot, 8 p.m. to 1 a.m. Who did I replace? Do either of you remember that?
8 p.m. to 1 a.m.
Okay, let's see.
Because the story I got from Gilero, because I had called the very next day, was that that guy left at night, left a note in Jim's box saying, I can't do this anymore, and he quit.
Wow.
And then I had literally called the next morning, and Jimmy goes, hey, when can you get out here? I've got an opening. But who was that guy?
Who was that guy?
Billy, do you not know? Do you not remember? Who's doing nights?
God, well, geez, if this is my memory, right? I was doing nights, and they said, we want you to do mornings. And I was about to go on vacation, and they were about to fire you. I think you were on mornings at the time.
No, right, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and they say, and Gilero said, well, I called Blair back, and I had to make up something about, you know, broadcasting in San Diego. He goes, because I still need a morning jock if you're on vacation. So when I came back from vacation, I did mornings just for 2 or 3 weeks, and then they put Delaney on mornings and put me in middays.
That's right, because, okay, I stand corrected. Billy took over my shift, and because Chuck wanted afternoons.
Right. Okay. Chuck Geiger.
Chuck Geiger, yeah.
Interesting. So how much weed were you guys smoking back in those days to not remember these things accurately?
Well, it wasn't so much back then as it was just this afternoon.
Oh!
No wonder you can't remember anything.
So, interesting. So Blair leaves... You go to D.C., you go to Detroit, you escape Detroit, 85. Come back
86,
to be a production. That's when you said your production skills got good.
Yeah.
Because you suddenly got hired to be the production director.
Yeah.
Who at that point, and who were you doing production for, 91X and the Mighty 690?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you got hired by who? Because Max doesn't remember hiring you.
You know, I remember getting hired there.
Production guy
was
not something that the PD hired. That was a sales issue.
Because you were telling me, oh, Stapleford. And I'm like,
wait,
no.
Who did it after?
Imaging. Imaging was Stapleford.
Yeah,
Max,
Stapleford
who did it after Eric Thompson? Remember, he was.
Yeah.
Eric was on nights, and then he became production director. And
I think Blair replaced Eric Thompson because everybody was always raving about Eric Thompson when I first got there because E.T. was the shit.
Yeah.
You come in, you replace him, and E.T. went off and did what Bill Corkery's doing, which is his own production.
Wait, and he was still around.
William the Corker.
William the Corker, yes.
Okay, great.
But I think maybe Tim Hackett had something to do with this.
Tim.
Yeah. Because he was a good friend of mine, and I think that he was saying, yeah, you would be good here. You know, we need a production director.
And what was Tim doing at that point?
Promotions, right?
I think he was promotions.
Yeah. Because
K-Rob?
Really good promotion.
K-Rob came after Tim. Or they weren't together for a while, because K-Rob was Mighty 690. I think Tim was 91X.
Yeah, I think he was both.
Right. Tim was creative director at one point.
Yeah.
And
so he's kind of a marketing guy.
Yeah. Don't forget about Sansone, Paul Sansone and all this.
Ah, yes. Sal Paradise.
Yeah. I mean.
Talk about him.
I saw Paul not too long ago.
Where? Is he here?
At Sky Show. Yeah.
What does he look like now?
He looks like Paul, like us, hair. Old versions of our former selves.
Oh, look at you, Blairita.
She looks like a bee.
Blairita doesn't look any different. Yeah.
Sal Paradise.
Billy looks just like the day he was born. It's crazy.
You do.
Bald and whiny.
It was Paul Sansone. Sal Paradise turned me on to the Spirit. I'd never been to the Spirit Club. Didn't know anything about it.
We're almost done with Blair's story. We'll come to
Blair said he was
no,
done
I
with
think
the story.
We are done with my story.
No, I just want to say that to me, the amazing part about it is the fact that you got fired twice,
mm-hmm.
came back,
mm-hmm.
And then when you bailed 91X, you went to KG, you went to Brown Broadcasting, right?
Yeah.
At that point.
That's right.
What do you remember? Because you talked about.
Maybe I got fired three times.
Wait,
no, I don't think you. I think you left.
I think Max, did you fire me, or did I leave on my own accord?
You left on your own accord. I had nothing to do.
Max,
I would have kept you.
What? You had just named Blairita APD, and the next day he goes to KGB. That's how it went down.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
No, wait, I was.
I remember having a conversation
had
with
we
you.
Flipped format yet?
Yes.
No.
You were PD.
Yeah,
of course
you'd
we had.
Formats because he was working with you. He was.
I was
Blair.
APD. I was your APD for not
a
just
day.
A day. No, I
you
was
sure?
for longer. Oh,
well,
yeah.
Well, officially.
I remember being scolded by Max for
what?
A really good. This was a great one.
All right.
Okay.
Tell us.
So do you remember Walk Like an Egyptian?
Yes.
Who doesn't? Okay, do you remember Walk with an Erection?
Yeah.
Yes,
of course.
Okay, so a great spoof tune, right?
Yeah.
And we're playing it on the air, and Max, you were working mornings with Katie.
Oh,
so,
God.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh,
so
you had to bail in the afternoon. And by the way, one of my favorite quotes of all time from any program director, Blair, there's nothing in programming that can't wait until tomorrow. God, I love that. That was like, oh my God, you're a genius.
You've just explained.
You're a fucking genius.
Yes, but here's the
You've
funny
just
thing.
Explained it's his like, miserable
so,
life.
I had to go home in the afternoon because I started at 4 in the morning.
No, this is not, you don't need to be defensive.
Okay.
I was all applauding you're going home and, because you were fucking working your ass off. But the point is, you left the keys with this novice little fuck named Blair, who, when he got a telephone call from the San Diego Union Tribune saying, we hear that you're playing this terrible song on the air, this Walk with an Erection. What are you going to do? And Blair goes, well, we're going to stop playing it because if it's offending people, like, we're going to fucking stop playing it, right? Todd comes in. Max comes in the next day. What the fuck did you say to the Union Tribune? I said, we're going to stop playing the song.
Wait,
well, why on earth would we stop playing the song? We're 91X. We do irreverent things. Why? What the fuck were you even thinking? Well, you know, I wasn't. I just wasn't fucking thinking.
Wow.
But that was kind of a defining moment.
Really?
For me, in terms
did
of
did you
like,
hate me after that? Was I
no.
just, oh, okay.
No, you were right.
I
might have still hated you.
All right.
Because
so let me ask
nobody
you
likes you to be
was
right.
Was it the union?
You know?
Nobody likes me anyway. I don't remember that story.
You don't
at
remember
all,
that happening?
Not at yeah. all. Yeah. That's
of course
great.
You don't, because yeah. you remember half the shit. Was I it know. The union or the Tribune that called? Because at that point,
they were still two.
They
of
were
them?
Two separate ones. Yeah, because that Maybe. Happened like way late '80s.
So it was one of them.
One of them called.
Yeah.
Who called you to get you that quote? George Varga?
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't
I, was, I wish you wouldn't have said that because I would have just said George Varga and I would have sounded like I knew something.
Hey, that's hilarious. So basically, that you fired him because he stopped
yeah.
playing
yeah, he
Walk
did.
With an Erection.
He fired me.
I didn't
I
fire
gave
you.
That
you
interview.
Were also, by the way, yeah. I look with it. Teenage Enema Nurses in Bondage. What was the song that people, oh, like.
88 Lines About 44 Women.
88. What was the other one that was really questionable? About?
Scraping
I Love Little
fetus.
Girls. I Love That's, Little Girls.
Oingo Boingo.
Right.
You don't remember Scraping Fetus
and
from
I don't
the
like
Wheel?
Mondays.
Yeah, but the title of a band, Scraping Fetus from the Wheel, is not as offensive as I Love Little Girls. They Make Me So. That's fucked up.
Let's face
that
it.
That was a big song for
None
us,
of it
remember?
Could make the airwaves.
Krusty
now.
The Goza, Kinko the
not
Clown.
Even close.
Kinko the Clown, the kid-loving clown.
Kid-loving
you know, Blair,
clown.
Now that you mentioned it, how come Oingo Boingo didn't get shit
Let's
for
not
little girls?
They
that
did. We stopped because playing it because it started sounding super unbelievably creepy after a while.
I didn't stop playing it.
Yeah, well, you got to remember, who took over after you, motherfucker?
Unbelievably
Tripp Reeve.
Tripp Reeve.
Anyway,
point
being is that I love the fact that you were like, oh yeah, well, I guess we'll stop playing it if it's offending one person.
That's right.
Years later, Stern goes on the air.
What the hell I was talking about?
That's hilarious.
Does anybody remember? By the way,
wait,
does anybody remember?
You never get to the point. You never get to the point.
Why do you interrupt me all the
because
time?
Because I want you to remember that. What are you going to say? And then pause right there. Remember
what I'm going to say.
He
is
leaves
not
to
be
go
relevant.
To KGB.
Yeah. All right. Now what I had to say.
And
is
KGB. Hold on. KGB, while you're there,
yeah.
moves to classic rock, stops mm-hmm. playing Currents. Do you remember?
Because yeah. oh,
from
yeah.
from our point of view, when that happened,
yeah.
I remember being in Kevin's office, and we were like, what the fuck
yeah.
just happened?
Yeah.
Because we all knew you. You were still a good friend, whatever it was. Ted the Puttyhead was yeah. running the station,
yeah.
right, with Pam Edwards?
Ted
and Pam?
Ted and Pam. Oh, it was a
And suddenly
it was
like
operation.
They stopped playing Currents, and
well,
we kind of went, what the fuck? They gave up.
It was a defensive move because of KCLX, because a station signed on and it was, you know, a classic rock station. They were going to try to steal the position. So their attitude was, let's just fuck ourselves up instead. Why get beat? Why don't we just beat ourselves? But, you know, the fact that they're still in the format and still in classic rock, you know, what, how many decades later?
Right.
Maybe it wasn't the wrong move. Who knows? But that was what happened, and we were not happy about it. We were like,
"Yeah,
you know,
I can't imagine
oh,
you were."
Good God! I think the active analogy was going around like stuffing wet towels underneath the closet that you've stuck yourself in, and now we're running out of air. How are we ever going to, you know, how is this radio station ever going to sound, you know, vibrant or thrive without any new music?
And since you worked at KSLN, we kind of pointed this out. When KSLN flipped frequencies about a year, year and a half ago, whatever it was, they went from 97.3 to whatever, they're 103.7.
Yeah.
That at that point, when they went and moved, 91X became the longest running same format on the same frequency station in San Diego forever, which is something that nobody figured out.
Golf
because
clap.
Because the I said I was there when it like it was starting to procure itself, and I'm thinking it's weird that nobody is going to remember that the station that's outlasted everybody at this point is on the same frequency because everything else has bounced around. But KSON was AM first, went to FM, started in the 40s as a country station or 60s, and then went to when did it get its FM transmitter? Mid 70s, right? Do you remember?
Yeah, well, I was on that signal because when I was 15 and
right, you know, so mid 70s it started.
They
doing
called it.
It
Sun 97 FM. It was their FM version of KSON, and that was my very first on air gig, and I was so freaking excited. You know, as you can imagine,
what were the kind of bands?
Or 16.
What were the artists you were playing?
It was old. It was old school country from a 1970s.
Perspective. So 60s, late 50s, early 60s?
Good God, man. It was like, you know, Earl Scruggs and, you know, I mean, it was...
You know, the weird thing is, here's my prediction. Whoever launches like a classic alternative country and alternative country at the same time, because all those Scruggs and Waylon, Willie, that early stuff,
oh,
if somebody
yeah.
did it again with the new alt country stuff, it would kill. Because
yeah,
it'd be like
right.
playing the Pistols and 21 Pilots at the same time. It's like kind of anti-establishment... Fuck you, we're country. We put the cunt in country.
And you look at some of that old stuff on YouTube, you know, like they used to have all these country and western shows on TV in Southern California, and they're great. I mean, really, really stood the test of time.
Yeah, they did. They were dressed like punk, little punk rockers.
Yeah,
back in the
exactly.
Day.
They all
so
dressed
all we
up.
Need to do is get Spotify to create an algorithm for it, and we're set.
All right, Max Tolkoff, you're going to wrap up with what? What did I tell you not to forget?
Holy fuck! I don't remember what I.
I said don't. I said don't forget it, and then you forgot it.
Yeah, I did because now we were talking about the longest station in San Diego on the same frequency. I wonder if it should be noted that up until a few years ago, the same jocks were on the air for like 30 years. You were there, Robin.
You're high.
Still there, Oz. No.
Because Oz left. Okay, Jim Gilero, no longer there.
Hang on.
Pam Wolf, no longer there. Dred Scott, no longer there.
Yes, we know that.
Rusty Nails, no longer there. Katie Manor, no longer there. Brian Jones, unfortunately, has passed away into the heavens of the heavens.
Right.
What was that idiot you hired that used to come down and go?
Mike Halloran?
No, no. The guy, Jeff.
Blair
he
Schultz?
Had the same name as Jeff. Oh, Jarrett,
Jeff Dean? No, not Jeff Dean.
Jeff, what was his name? Jeff, what is Jeff and Jerry's real name? Jeff, whatever it is. Anyway.
I'm so sorry.
Jeff, not
no.
Jeff Gibson.
The other, keep
yeah,
up
yeah,
on
the guy,
Jeff Gibson,
the guy.
Hey, don't be demeaning
to Gibby.
Buddy.
No, not Gibby. I love Gibby.
Zoltar.
This other guy comes in.
Yes.
And
I
first,
hired him from KPRI.
Okay, this guy comes in and he goes, oh, you're the new guy. Okay, the first thing you learn is this is what you do. You take the playlist and you throw it away. And then he grabbed all these Who records and he starts playing Who records. And I'm like, whoa, what the fuck is going on? I remember calling you and going, do you have any idea what's happening at fucking like, you
yeah.
know,
yeah.
10 o'clock on a Saturday when this Jeff.
Yeah, what was his last? I mean, I went surfing with him
know,
a few times.
I know.
Jeff, a little. You
okay.
Know,
he was actually.
What is Jeff and Jerry's real name? Jeff
Elliott.
Jeff Elliott.
Jeff Elliott.
Jeff Elliott.
Oh, my God, yes.
The other Jeff Elliott. He comes in.
Do you want to hear the story or not? You just want to spew your opinion.
I'm just telling you. I told you. Get rid of that guy. And guess what? You did.
Thank you.
Thank God you
something,
did.
There was something wrong.
He was falsifying his.
Because he would call me. And I was doing mornings at this point. He would call me at 2 o'clock in the morning just to harass. He would leave messages on the phone. And he was just out of his mind in the middle of the night. So finally,
and there was a reason for that too.
Yes, there was.
I think he was doing a lot of speed. I'm pretty sure that because I remember when I was doing nostalgic rock, you know, Sunday mornings I go down there and he'd been working the overnight and he was just like this and you know yelling and screaming about something. I mean, always just about you know he was never.
Hey,
yeah,
can I bring up a subject?
Yes. Sure.
Okay, Art Bell.
Yeah,
he was on 91X, wasn't he?
No, No, no. Wolfman Jack was.
Yeah, well, Wolfie was came in and that we were part of that.
69 Extra Gold.
He was on 69 Extra Gold.
Yeah, I don't remember Art Bell.
Well, during that period of time when we were going down to Mexico, and Sue Delaney was there, and we had the part-time guy, and he said his name was Art Bell, but he wanted to change his name because of some sort of, and he was always like some sort of legal thing, you know, and so he wanted to change his name to. He said, "Well, my family calls me Trey, so how about Trey Bell? I want to call myself Trey Bell." It's
like, and you understanding Trey, what French meant?
Trey Bell,
yeah. You're like, no, you're not very
like
pretty.
Very beautiful in right, French. What? Right. That just makes me kind of sick to hear you say
Trey
that.
Trey Bell.
But he was, his name was Art Bell. It could be a different Art Bell. But then later, when Art Bell became a phenomenon, I'm like, was that the same fucking Art Trey Bell from 91X? He may have been a part-timer before he became, you know, the
Art Bell.
Existential, spiritual.
The alien hunter.
Alien hunter phenomenon guru.
How much weed were you smoking then before I looked this up?
How much weed was I smoking then?
Yeah, but just, or Art now? Bell, hang on.
All right, while Michael looks that up, Billy, I want to ask you, what do you remember about who was on the air when? Because here was the thing.
Okay.
When we changed formats, and then eventually Sue Delaney left.
Right.
Went to KGB.
Yeah, went to KGB. Oddly, we did focus groups for 91X throughout the rest of the 80s, when the people in the room were asked, unaided, so who does mornings, or who do you know at 91X? Sue Delaney's name came up even 10 years later.
Damn unaided recall.
Yeah, exactly.
Fuckers.
That's right. When people were asked, who's this Mad Max guy, people go, oh, he's some sort of pervert on the air. That's how he's described. And I'm watching this behind the glass, by the way. It's very embarrassing.
I love focus groups behind glass.
One of the
embarrassing situation to be in.
One of the hardest things for any alternative station or any rock station is to do a morning show that, you know,
right,
actually grabs people. So sure, we had this problem. And at some point, we looked around and realized, well, Billy's been here for a while, and he sounds good. Let's put Billy on the air. That'll solve all our problems in mornings. Remember? Then you did mornings.
Yeah, I don't...
Because then we also had Steve. We put Steve on in the mornings as well, because...
That was after
that was after
Sue
you
left.
Yes.
After Sue... No, my memory is this,
yes,
right? You know, we had the changeover, right? And we just stuck with... The lineup that we had at the time of the changeover, which was Sue Delaney in the morning, myself middays, Jim Gelaro
in the afternoons,
Todd Ralston at night, and T. Brian Shock on overnights. Okay,
and this is the first variation of the Rick Carroll Rock of the 80s.
This was like the first week. Okay, the format change happened on a Tuesday, so we did it like that for like the next week or two. And then they came up with new names for the jocks and new shifts. And
not they. We had to come up with our own names.
I know, but Gelaro comes down because I would always change over with him, you know?
Yeah.
And he's got this list, and it says Delaney and Friends. So, you know, Sue was so smart. When she gets on the air, she goes, "This is Delaney and Friends." She thought that was going to be her new name, Delaney and Friends. But Gelaro had just, you know, the Delaney, Bonnie and Friends, the 1970s thing, right? So then that's when they put me on mornings, but only for like a couple of weeks until Rusty and... It was Rusty and the Jet, and Sue went back
to
middays...
Jet?
And I went back to nights. So then after they worked, after Nails and the Jet, who was a jock, because Rusty couldn't operate the equipment,
right?
After they worked for a couple of weeks, it's like, okay, this is what we planned to do in the first place. So Sue and Rusty got in there, right? They put me back on middays.
Yeah.
And nights, I think, was will, because you had a really short shift, right?
I had a short shift when I became PDA. Music director, I had a regular shift, but I think then we added Pam to the mix, and I did
Pam wasn't until the summer, though.
Yeah.
There was, that's why they brought Steve in, right? Because T. Brian Schock was doing nights after you, and they wanted somebody that was a little more seasoned. So that's when they brought Steve in.
No,
we seasoned.
Marinated
salty.
In THC.
Salty.
Steve
was hired for nights.
Yes, and we hired him because Rick Carroll's still consulting, and K-Rock had a Brit, and we said,
what was the name of that Brit?
We needed a Brit. Richard Blade.
And Steve will tell you the story that...
I think I remember his name.
He got Jalero. He goes, well, he got Jalero to hire me because he had his air check queued up on a cassette recorder, yes. And he walked into the building.
I was in that lobby when that happened, yeah.
Okay, tell us about it.
Oh, I told the story last week of what happened the first day. You remember that?
Well,
right?
Of course.
Let Billy tell the story. So what do you remember about that cassette?
That Steve walked up to Jalero and said, please listen. And, you know, Jalero was not the, you know, he wasn't a real hard sell. So
Steve physically put the headset on him.
Yeah.
He took his earphones off, his Sony earphones, the little ones, and he put them right on Jim and hit play.
Here, and the next thing you know, Jalero comes down once again, you know, because I worked before him, and he goes, I'm going to hire this English guy. He tells me all this stuff.
And he brings him in the car.
This is before. He had made the decision, but Steve wasn't there. So when Steve showed up, you know, it wasn't unexpected. And I should add at this point, before I forget, that one of the... indicators of that the format change was coming. We all knew, right, Max? Because the numbers had been so bad that they were going to do something.
Yeah.
And I remember saying to Jalero, I said, you know, I know they want to get rid of us, but what they should do, they should do New Wave. They'd really kick ass. That's what we called alternative back in those days, right?
Yep.
So Jalero, he looks at me, he turns around, he goes, I got to tell somebody. What about if they do New Wave and keep all of us? And this was like the day before it actually happened. So I was in heaven after that.
Yeah, there was.
We should at this point, we should take a fake break, end this version of the podcast.
I was starting to tell a story, and now you just interrupted.
No, but this is the thing, because I want him to take over, because at this point, Blarita
take
Brown is gone out of the equation. He's fucked off to KGB.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he becomes the victim of classic rock.
The god of the sky show.
So you're kicking me out.
No, you can stay, because I want you to interject from the opposite point of view from the KGB side when we started doing things like Ted the Puttyhead, because you were in the building at that point, weren't you?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
You were in the KGB.
Ted hated that.
All right.
Hang on. William the Corker, please cue up another 5 hours of tape in there, because apparently we're going to go through it, because Mouth.
The outro is... Wait. I'll fucking put your fucking headphones on, you fucking pieces of shit.
I want to get me Gatorade.
Jonathan Blair Schultz, I want to thank you so much for coming in. We'll probably have to chop this into two segments.
Wait a minute, where is he going? He's staying.
This is the end of his segment as the main man we're talking about.
Fine.
Yes, he's staying.
He can
fuckhead.
Stay. So you don't have to say thank you and goodbye.
No, I'm thanking him for his fucking time. Shut the fuck up, old man.
It took me eight
months.
8 months to get him to do that, because he wasn't doing that at first. Now he does it with impunity.
Thank you, Jonathan Blair Schultz. Thank you for helping me get this job at 91X that I got back in 1986.
That's right.
When this fuck finally hired my ass.
Yeah. We didn't talk about that.
Why don't we talk about it? Because you had nothing to do with getting him hired.
He did.
No, he didn't.
He?
No, you should
did.
Thank
it was,
Fred
everything
Jacobs.
Was going so smoothly.
Yes.
Until now.
It was Fred Jacobs. That Blair never mentioned you.
Yeah, I didn't.
You lied to me?
I've been lying to you all these years.
I arrived in San Diego.
Yep.
And I had
didn't
heard,
know anyone.
I had heard, because he'd left Wheels, and when you called me on the phone to talk to me about it, because at that point I was at DTX, and I remember you saying something that you should, because I'd met him before. I'd actually met him before.
Right.
And I was trying to convince him that he should play some Jewish, you know, hip-hop on the radio.
He's starting to remember.
Pre-modest Yahoo.
At least if he doesn't remember,
Fred
he knows it makes sense.
Fred was...
if I'm working with Halloran in Detroit, and I come to San Diego, and I say, hey, there's this guy named Halloran who knows...
Who did you say that to?
Well, it was a guy who looked a lot like you.
No.
Yes, but you have to remember something. You have to remember something. Pam Wolf had not announced that she was leaving yet, right? But he'd mentioned it, and then Fred wanted to get me out of fucking Detroit because we kept fucking up Riff and their, we're going to run the world. So he was like, Halloran's lost his job, why don't you hire him? Yeah. At that point, you got me for cheap. $24,000 a year. Sorry to break it to you. That I was making
at KDPI. I was making 24 KDPI. We were all making 24, and we all had credit cards too. I don't know how that happened. At least I had.
You had
a credit card?
Fuck, I did. I never had a credit card. So anyway, thank
you
again.
I hired at 94.9 in 2009 because the guy who was there was in that 20,000 range back in the '80s and had stayed there the entire time and had had 3% raises. The entire time. So when they said, well, we've only got $50,000 to offer you in 2009, it's like, yeah, but no, sorry, that ain't happening.
It's insane.
But you think about that was, you know, I did the math in reverse and it's like, yeah, son of a bitch, if you're making about $21,000 in 1980.
And get a 3% increase.
3% increase.
For 6,000 years.
Yeah.
You can eventually get to poverty level.
Yeah.
Max Tolkoff, Billy Bones. Jonathan Blair, we're going to wrap this version of it up. There's going to be this little pause of a week, and suddenly
Blair
we're going to start.
Blair on the air.
Suddenly
name.
We're going to start again, and it's going to sound like we just fuck. It's going to be like a Jeopardy thing. We're just going to change our ties, and then we're going to keep going.
Okay.
But thank you. This is the. If you want to get a hold of us, by the way, what's the email address?
Thatoddcast@gmail.com.
Thatoddcast@gmail.com.
Right.
We're waiting here for Frank Felix.
Yeah.
Geiger, Chuck Geiger, who else?
Larry Bruce,
Lenny Bruce, and...
Ted Edwards. By the way,
Pam
Ted
Edwards.
And Pam were not married or anything. Ted and Pam, they were
They just had the two first name problem.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Right? Jonathan and Blair.
And neither of their last names are really Edwards. I hate to break that down.
There's more I wanted to talk about with Blair, but now you want to shut him down.
What do you want to bring up with him?
I want to talk about Frank Felix stories with him, but I can do that later. It's all right. Do what you want. It's your show.
And now, the Frank Felix appendix. Slam the door.